Thomas Gagliano is a life mentor and an author and a speaker who has written some of the best stuff I've seen out there about bullying. And not just about how to prevent your kid from being bullied, but also how to prevent your kid from becoming a bully. He's got real, real insight into it. And he's worked, of course, with Dr. Abraham Twersky. I'm just such a fan of anyone who's trying to change the debate and stop saying, look, boys will be boys. This is how things are. So it's a pleasure to welcome Mr. Thomas Gagliano to SiriusXM Insight. Hello, sir. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you. You know, the most impressive thing about your public speaking is that you, right off the bat, tell people that you were a bully as a kid.
Yes, I was. I was a bully. I was an addict. And, you know, I believe all of that stuff. That's all symptoms. Domestic violence, bullying, addiction, all symptoms. What I was an angry kid. That's what I was. I was a kid that you would tell your kids, don't play with that kid. You know, I was hurting inside. And like all of the bullies and addicts and people that act out destructively, like domestic violence, all of them have insides that are really torn apart. That's what they really have. They're full of self-hate and anger, and they're fragmented. You see their outsides. You see how they are on the outside. But insides, they're totally different. And when I realize this through my own journey, and when I work with middle school kids with bullies, what I try to do is get their insides to come out, to become congruent. When I get a bully or a recovering addict to talk about their feelings, which they never knew how to do, or process their feelings, which they never knew how to do, if I get them to do that, they don't have that need to hurt others as much. They don't have that need to overpower others, because it's all about power. At one mm-hmm. time in their lives, they had no power, and they felt absolutely oppressed, and they want to do that to other people.
Is it about trying to find dignity? Is it about trying to find, even if it's a false sense of dignity and pride?
Well, I'll tell you what it is, and I'll use my own experience, and I think this really can give you a good picture about what it's about. You know, when I was a kid, my father was an alcoholic, and my dad, if he didn't come home at a certain time, it meant he was going to come home, and it meant he was going to hurt someone. Now, when a kid is 9 years old, 8 years old, 7, 10, something like that, they don't say to themselves, oh, gee, my dad suffers from this disease called alcoholism. He's doing the best he can. Instead, the child says, what's the matter with me? Something must be wrong with me, or my dad would want to spend more time with me, or my mom would want to spend more time with me. I must be damaged goods. Now, that single paragraph I just told you creates negative core beliefs. It creates a negative thinking about oneself. You just don't feel you're valued, you're important. And if you're not able to talk about that negative feeling, what happens eventually as you grow older, you're going to act out that negative feeling with addiction, with bullying, with domestic violence, or you'll act it in with depression, with isolation. So it all stems from childhood messages, which I really believe impacts every part of our lives, to the intimacy we have or don't have, to our parenting skills, to the careers we choose, to the roles we play. It all comes down to childhood messaging, how we think the world views us. And there's no more important messages we receive than from our higher powers, which are our caregivers.
Yeah. What does destructive entitlement mean?
Well, destructive entitlement, what I call destructive entitlement, is when I'm not feeling good about myself, which is what I just said earlier. Bullies have this, addicts have this, people that hurt in domestic violence have this. You don't want to talk about it because you don't feel like you're good enough. You feel like everybody's going to judge you and put you down, and you go into isolation in your head. You're talking to the wrong person, to yourself, if you follow me.
Mm-hmm.
And you come out of that with a self-righteousness, like, the world owes me. You know, the world needs to pay the bill for what happened to me as a kid.
Yeah.
And you develop this destructive entitlement. In other words, you give yourself permission to act in ways, regardless of the pain it causes yourself or causes those around you. That's what addiction is. That's what bullying is. And the common thread with bullies, with addicts, is they really have no self-compassion, no compassion for themselves. Therefore, they really have no compassion for anyone around them. And that's why they have this destructive entitlement.
We're talking, of course, with Thomas Gagliano, who's an author and a speaker and life mentor. And wherever you're standing in your house, sir, it's a good spot. We're getting a good signal now. It was a little staticky before.
So,
thank you.
Got it.
Well, and I really appreciate what you said, that bullies have no compassion for themselves, and it does seem like that's the sort of behavior that can play itself out more in adult life beyond bullying, be it through adultery or drug abuse. You have said that there is no bad boy or girl.
No, it's so important for parents to understand one important message, that your child may not be viewing the world the way you think they're viewing the world. As I said before, children are egocentric. The world revolves around them. And at an early age, everything is their fault. If my parents get divorced, it's my fault. So it's very important. Even when a mom or dad dies, a child will be mad at that parent, like, you abandoned me. Now, that sounds crazy. But again, when you're 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 and 9, that's how you view the world. So already you feel like something's wrong with me. And as you grow up with that belief, I call it the warden in my book. My book is about this inner critic, this warden, constantly telling you what you're doing wrong, never allowing you to celebrate any victories in your life. Now, you could be a millionaire doing that. You could be on Skid Row doing that. And it doesn't make a difference how much money you make or what you have materialistically. If your insides feel like that, you're going to sabotage your happiness because you feel like you don't deserve it.
Mr. Gagliano, I'm afraid I'm going to have to ask if we can cut the call, and my producer Neil is going to try and call you back and see if we can get a better connection, because I love everything you're saying, and I don't want it to be marred by static. So we're just going to say goodbye for 1 second, and and we'll get you back in just a few moments. Neil will call you right away. In the meantime, Frank, let me ask you about this. I'm guessing that you were a horrible bully to people. I'm guessing that you were the meanest kid in school, and you just took it all out on other people.
If you can interpret all of the jokes I made as the class clown as a form of bullying. and the people that I feel bad about were my teachers at the time. All my classmates loved that I was such a cut up.
Were you picked on?
I was, yes, absolutely.
I was substantially, and it's actually why to this day and we're going to get Mr. Gagliano back, but I have a real issue with the word bully. As a kid, I was subject to such ferocious peer abuse that when a guidance counselor would say, okay, you were being bullied, I would think, you're not taking me seriously to use a word like that.
Yeah.
Bullying sounds like an outdated Archie Comics term, some archaic trope that sounds like what, the little rascals got from Butch and Wim.
Right.
And to this day, I kind of feel like the first step to stopping bullying is to stop calling it bullying, because we need a stronger term for it.
Right.
I think the kind of abuse that would drive a child to suicide or self-destructive acts deserves a much harsher
stronger
label.
Term, yeah.
Yeah. And the worst part about it is realizing that, being bullied by other kids will turn a good kid into a bully.
Right.
Not every time.
Yeah, that's, I think, what's considered the classic pattern, is that the bullied become bullies.
And if it's no different from if you beat a kid, that kid will grow up to think that beating up people is an okay way to solve your problems.
Yeah.
And, to me, I would always, the toughest thing about it for so many kids is that you can't go to the principal. You can't go to the office, because then you're scorned and considered someone who can't solve your own problems.
Yeah.
But B, there's only so much administrators can do.
Yeah,
I had a knife pulled on me when I was 9 years old in a parking lot once.
Uh-huh.
I mean, and to have administrators refer to that as bullying.
Yeah.
When I think it's harassment. I think it's persecution. I think I think it's terroristic. We have Tom Gagliano back on the phone. Hello, sir. Thank you for joining us again.
Thank you very much.
Sorry, it sounds like a whole new call. That's okay. It happens all the time in this medium. But while we were separated from you, I was saying that one of my problems with bullying, and you may disagree, is the actual term bullying. I don't think that it does justice to the kind of ferocity that could drive young kids to want to take their own life in some cases. And it's really peer abuse. It's un-American persecution. I do think that in general, we don't take bullying seriously as a culture. And a lot of both parents and administrators alike think it's just a natural thing kids have to get through.
Yeah, I believe that, and this is what I talk about, you know, we always look for schools in different places to try and help with the bullying situations, and of course, there's a responsibility, but I really believe that the biggest responsibility, the biggest way to stop to stop the victim and bully mentality is to create a place where your children can talk to you, share their struggles with you. And I know I facilitate multiple parenting groups, and it's amazing how parents don't create that with their children. And what does that mean? That means when your child struggles, whether it's about sexual orientation, whether it's if they want to talk to you about drugs, whatever it is, you need to create an environment where your children can discuss their curiosity, their struggles with you. If you don't, the child will solicit that information from the wrong people, and that's not what you want. So with all of these situations, I believe that it doesn't have to ever get to the point of suicide if parents create a safe place for their children to talk to them about whatever their children want to talk to them about. And it may be some things that you don't want to hear at times, but that's okay. Create that safe place with them. And that's so important in parenting. You know, my son a few months ago said to me, "Hey, Dad, you know, a couple of my kids and friends in school smoke weed." And he says, "I'm curious, I don't know what that would be like." Now, I'm a recovering addict. You can imagine what went through my head right away. Like, Oh, my God, this is crazy. What are you, nuts? I turned and said to him, "Listen, let's talk about it. What do you know about weed? Let's discuss it. Let's go on the Internet. Let's find out what happens when people smoke weed, what can happen." We had a conversation. Now, please hear me. As parents, we are the decision makers, and we're the rule makers. I'm not telling parents not to be that. But what I'm saying is, if your child can't talk to you about their curiosity, they're going to act out their curiosity, and you don't want that. So all of these things that we discuss about bullying and about all these other things, to me, never can get that bad if you're talking to your child. If they have a place that they can discuss all their struggles with you. So the most important messaging, again, we receive in our lives is those we receive from our higher powers, which are our caregivers.
I would imagine it's very challenging for a lot of parents to actually listen to their kids without judging, without letting the inner authoritarian take over. It's easy to say, "I'll create a safe space for a kid," but what happens when your kid tells you that, you know, "I'm 12 and I want to smoke weed"?
I think that's great, but you want to know the most important thing I stress with parents is you need to work on your own shortcomings, your own difficulties. Show your children that when you're wrong, you're willing to say you're sorry. Show your children that you're willing to ask for help if you need it. It's courage. It doesn't mean it's weakness. Show your children that you're willing to work on your shortcomings. When we model that for our children, believe me, there's a great place for humility in our lives to show our children we're willing to do that. And again, when your child is able to come to you, you know, I had a situation where my son was pitching in a baseball game, and he was the lead pitcher, and he pitched terrible. He couldn't get the ball over the plate, and his team lost. And I started to walk to the dugout, and I said, "Geez, I wonder how I can show up as a healthy parent. Should I put on my therapist hat, ask him how he's feeling? Should I put on my baseball hat, help him with his follow-through?" Right. I got to the dugout, and in front of all the kids, he looked at me, and he said to me, "Dad, I need a hug." That's what we needed. See, he didn't need me to fix anything at that point. He didn't need me to be his higher authority at that point. He just needed a hug from his dad.
Wow.
You know, and many times in our lives, our children need to know when they struggle, they need to know they're going to be okay. They need to know they're accepted for just who they are. There's plenty of time to do the mentoring later on and telling and guiding them and doing all of these things. But when your child really struggles, I tell parents, let compassion guide what you say and how you say it. Think about what you would have wanted from your dad and mom at that age. Let that guide your behavior. And again, when you create that place, you'd be amazed at how much your children will listen to you.
Well, it's great to create a place where your kids can actually come to you and tell you if they're being picked on in school or persecuted or bullied. But I don't have to tell you, a lot of kids just won't feel comfortable. They're so ashamed that they can't solve this problem. They don't want their parents to know.
What's
a kid to do in that circumstance? I mean, my dad was a principal at another school. I never wanted him to know that I was being interfered with, and I wound up trying to lash back with violence against the kids who were using violence against me.
Why didn't you want your father to know? What would be your reason if I asked you? Why wouldn't you want to tell your dad?
Because my father would damn sure make sure it stopped, and then that would open me up to the scorn of my peers for having a dad who came in to fight my battles for me. This is more of a male problem than a female problem,
perfect.
I would guess.
Perfect. So if my son, and he has, come to me and told me he's being bullied, here's what I tell him. First, if he's in impending danger, I step right in. If our children are in real danger, we need to keep them safe and step right in. But before I do that, if they're not in impending danger, I'm going to let my son get out of his own mess. We're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about how you're feeling. You're feeling afraid? We're going to talk about what would you like me to do? Is this something I can help you with? Let's talk about it. I want my son to learn how to cope with life on life's terms. I want him to learn how to get out of his own messes. Now, if he needs me, I'm there. I don't want him to be hurt. I'll be there for him. But are there some coping mechanisms he could develop? Maybe leaving that kid alone, ignoring that kid, not talking to that kid when that kid talks to you. You know, it's so important for our children to learn how to get out of their own messes. Why? Because as they go through life, they're going to have to build self-esteem and integrity and say, hey, I can handle this. I can get out of this. Children whose parents always rush in and solve the problem will not learn coping mechanisms. And when they get older, guess who they're going to get mad at, parents? They're going to get mad at you because they don't have enough self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
So I tell parents, let them talk to them. Discuss with them. How could they avoid this bully? What could they do? Let them try to get out of the mess first. Now, again, if they can't, you got to go in there. Absolutely. But it's very important to build that integrity and self-esteem, teaching them how to get out of their own messes first.
I want to come back to something you said before in our static phase of the conversation, because I think it's worth repeating. What is the warden?
The warden is an inner critic. It's developed early on when the person's core beliefs are developed. The warden is this little voice in our head that tells us all the things we're doing wrong, never allows us to celebrate our victories. The warden is that little voice that if you came from a childhood where your parents didn't handle conflict in a healthy way, if you saw your parents running from intimacy, not sharing their feelings, one was controlling everything, the other was shutting down, one was running out the door. What's going to happen is, I believe, in my book, The Problem Was Me, you'll develop a warden. And the warden's going to sabotage your intimacy, because the definition of intimacy you're going to receive is one that says it's fearful, it's painful, don't go near it. If anybody gets close to you, don't trust them, you're going to get hurt. And all of these messaging, again, childhood messages, and I just put a name, the warden, on it, mm-hmm. is going to sabotage your happiness in your life. So in my groups that I facilitate, I make all of my clients put their warden's messages right on the floor. What were they? That I would never be happy, that I'm not lovable, I'll never really succeed in business. What are all those messages you believe you developed early on in childhood that is stopping the happiness in your life? Now, are they imagined or are they real? And I can tell you that 90% of the fears in our lives really are more imagined than they are real. But I had to walk through that to understand that.
We have a caller, Justin, in the great state of New York. Hello, Justin. You are on with Thomas Gagliano. Welcome to SiriusXM Insight.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I've called a few times, John. I'm a teacher on Long Island. And a couple things, but we'll see how many we can talk about. You were discussing the role of the parent in regards to bullying.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm curious to know what you think the place of the teacher is, because, you know, we're trying to create a not only like a safe emotional environment, but also physical environment in our school. So, you know, on the parent side, you mentioned letting the kids sort of try to sort it out, but of course intervening is dangerous. I just want to know your views on the teacher side when bullying happens at the school.
That's a good question, Thomas. Very often, you know, people think about it's between the student and their parents, or the bully and their parents. And very often people think about what can the administration do. But in many cases, and I learned this when my wife was a teacher, teachers can really be on the front lines of these conflicts.
Yeah, I'll tell you, Justin, you got a tough job today. It really is tough. You have to watch everything you do, because you're under the scrutiny of laws and lawsuits and this and that. And I teachers have a very tough job today. I really can feel for being put in a situation where I'm sure there's times, Justin, you want to do certain things, but you can't do certain things. I can tell you that I believe that the most important thing is for the teacher and the parents and the principal to get on the same plane, to have the same game plan, to be a unit instead of battling each other. That's the first thing. If parents and teachers are battling each other, I don't have to tell you how difficult that is to get to any resolution. The other thing I believe which helps is to follow through with things. I'm not blaming anybody, but when you have a situation in school that there's a bully situation with a victim situation, and you follow it through a few months later, like go back to that situation and talk to those participants on how they're doing then, like follow up on it. You
right.
know, I go into middle schools and I try to, as I said earlier, I try to talk to bullies, and bullies have all common threads. They're angry inside. They don't have compassion for themselves, therefore they have no compassion for others. And I sit them down and I say, okay, let's watch a movie. Let's pretend. Look at this guy John who's bullying this guy Phil. You know, what do you think John is thinking when he's doing this? What do you think Phil is thinking when you're doing this? See, I'm trying to get them to go into their inside.
And you're teaching empathy, too. You're teaching empathy.
Exactly. Exactly. Get to that inside. When I have kids in middle school that I get to their insides, when they allow me and trust me enough to talk about those insides, as I said earlier, and I bring those insides out, I make them more congruent. And what congruency is I get them to talk about their feelings. I get them to tell me those stories they're making up that they would not trust anybody to talk about. And when I get that from a kid, all of a sudden they need to hurt others and they need to power over power, you know, be in a power position with others, really diminishes.
Right, right. One of the things that's been really surprising to me, I'm a middle school teacher, so you know how complicated that age is.
Mm-hmm.
There's often, say, a depiction in nonfiction or even fictional media of what the typical bully might look like. And what I find is I'm often surprised by when I find out who is a bully. You know, I'll have kids in my class where everything seems wonderful in my class, that they participate, they're sweet, they're this, that, and then I find out they've been tormenting someone, and
yeah.
I never know from any kind of behavior in my class, and it
yep.
never ceases to amaze me. And not to, you know, it generally seems like that they're females that are like that. The males are often a little more outward in that regard, but the females that are bullies, I never know it from their behavior in class. I hear like, oh, so-and-so's been saying this and doing this and texting this. And it's like, I never could have imagined.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And very often those are kids who are nice kids who were bullied and then sort of sought to find a form of dignity in doing the same thing to someone else. Abuse, negativity is the most contagious subject known to man.
Yeah, I'm hurting others the way I'm hurting inside. But I wanted to say one thing that is the new changing, the social change in our economy today, in our lives today, that are creating more of a bully mentality. I said earlier that, you know, children do not see the world the way parents think they see the world. You know, we are in a society today where moms work much more than they ever did, and dads work, and you need 3 salaries to survive. And, you know, parents are doing this because they're trying to help their children. They're doing this because they're trying to build a better life for their children. I said earlier that sometimes children don't see it as such. Mm. Children may say, what's the matter with me that mom and dad aren't spending enough time with me? And one of the worst things that I see in today's society is we overindulge our children. What we do is, because we feel guilty, we're not around, we're working, we're doing this, we're doing that,
right,
we buy them things. And let me tell you, there's no worse message we can give our children than to tell them, when you're sad, instead of talking about your feelings, buy something, and it'll change that feeling. I mean, that's what addiction is. You know, buy a bottle of scotch, and it'll numb your pain, medicate your pain. Use these drugs. Overeat. Pornography. I can go on and on. But what we do in this society is sometimes we overindulge our children instead of stopping and saying, okay, maybe I don't have a lot of time to spend with my kids, but I could still give them quality time. I could still be curious. I could still talk to them about their day, who their friends are, who their friends' parents are, what sites are they on the computer. Be curious with your children. That's so much more important than trying to arrest your guilt by buying them things. And I think because a lot of moms work today, I don't really believe many families understand that the message the child is receiving, it's not what they think. And that unrest inside of that child of why can't mom and dad spend more time with me is a perfect segue into bullying.
Justin, I thank you very much for the call. Really do appreciate it. And before I get to, I want to get to another caller, but really quick, sir, you had something really great in your in one of your lectures about what to do when a kid says "I'm sorry" that I found to be very, very instructive. Can you explain it?
Yeah, one of the messages we need to give our children is that they're allowed to make mistakes. Doesn't mean they are a mistake. That they can fail at times. It doesn't mean they are a failure. I teach parents to give their children consequences based on the choices they make. For instance, my son doesn't clean his room. Therefore, he's made the choice to lose his allowance. Everything is based on their choices. We want to create healthy habits for our children. Why? We are not going to be able to control our kids. Our kids are going to get old enough. We're going to do whatever they want to do. No one tell them to do. What we want to do is instill in them, supply them with the tools to control their own behavior, where they want to do what we tell them to do, not have to do what we tell them to do. And that is done through healthy habits, and that is done through a message that when they make a mistake, they're not a bad kid that deserves to be punished. They're a good kid. They made a bad choice, and they need consequences. Mm-hmm. You've got to get them ready for the world, but they're not a bad kid.
Rebecca in Seattle, we only have about a minute, but you're on with Thomas Gagliano. Thanks for the call.
Hi. I wanted to underscore something and tell you kind of an interesting coincidence about what you're doing today. I'm a psychotherapist as well and worked about 20 years ago in the mental health unit of a children's prison. So these were kids who had done some terrible things. These were all girls that I was working with. And I was teaching writing therapy, poetry therapy, and could not get through to these kids until one day on the car radio on the way to there, I heard Pete Townsend's Behind Blue Eyes, and I finally brought it in to the kids and played it for them, and some of them just broke open because that sense of not being understood and not being heard was so palpable in that song.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. So
absolutely.
I just, since it's Pete Townsend's birthday, I thought I'd do a little salute to him and to the kids.
Oh, thank you so much. That's a brilliant point, Rebecca. You know, my dad was a administrator in middle school, and he actually started a program on Long Island called Focus, which was designed to get the lowest of the low, the worst-behaved kids, the dirtbags, the kids that administrators prayed would drop out, and do anything they could to keep these kids from dropping out of school. And it's sort of why your work, Mr. Gagliano, means so much to me. How can people learn more about your work and about what you're trying to do?
Well, they could go to my website, theproblemwasme.com. That's my book, The Problem Was Me. And by the way, my wife totally agreed with the title. She finally got it right. So there you go. But it's theproblemwasme.com. And I have on my website some interesting digital products and stuff you could look at, as well as ordering my book. And you could also leave me a message. I will reply to all the messages that I receive from the website, and I just want to comment on what that lady said. It's
please.
So true. All kids are screaming for help. The key is to get that voice out to the surface. The key is to get that voice where they feel like somebody cares. And that is the key. When we can do that with our children and give them the message that we care about them, that they're important just the way they are, with all their pimples, whatever that is, we've done a great deed.
Thank you so much. Please come back on the show anytime. And if you're in the New York area and your accent implies you might be sometime, we'd love to have you in person anytime. Yeah, you'd like to join us and take calls for a full hour.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Thank you as well.